Hello, this is Scott Wells for TheMagicWordPodcast.com. In this fourth installment of my week at the Magic Castle, we enjoy takeout from the In-N-Out Burger with master mentalist Bob Cassidy, who is headlining in the early slot of the parlor this week. A little later in the evening, I was able to catch up with John Carney, who gave me a status update on what he's been up to during the past year and his plans for the future. To wrap up the evening and this podcast, I sat down with one of the Long Beach mystics, David Diebel, who was, for me, one of the standout performer highlights of the last Magic Live convention in Las Vegas. I hope you appreciate the short discussions being broken up into several podcasts rather than one longer one. I always like to receive feedback from listeners with your suggestions and or words of support. Of course, your generous donations are always and sincerely appreciated. If you can give financial support to this unsponsored podcast, then please send your donations through PayPal to scottwellsmagic@gmail.com. So now it's time to listen and enjoy part four of my week at the castle here on The Magic Word. Scott Wells for TheMagicWordPodcast.com, and I thought you guys might kind of enjoy having lunch with Bob Cassidy and me. We just went over to In-N-Out Burger, and it was just crazy busy, as it always is, and, of course, very noisy, kind of hard to carry on any kind of conversation. So I thought I'll just set the recorder on as we come back to his you're in the Bob, what is this, the
This is the Charlie Miller Suite.
Charlie Miller Suite up on the fourth floor. We're overlooking the Magic Castle right across the street, so it's got a nice view of everything here then, too. So, anyhow, I'll set this aside.
If you hear us chewing and pooing there. Right.
Exactly. So, anyhow, you were saying something about earlier. You're going to be lecturing for, what's the name of the group again?
The Elders.
The Elders.
It's a group of mentalists, Max Mayer and all that. You know who started it? Burton Sperber.
Yes, okay.
Remember
sure.
Bert?
I do.
And they used to have the meetings in his office, which was humongous.
Mm-hmm.
But after he passed away, they got thrown out of there.
And so where do they meet then now?
It's at one of the members' homes. It's a very large home. They usually get about 40 or 50 people.
Wow.
So he's got a large area. That's going to be fun. Because Jeff booked this for me, and he's going,
Jack
well...
Jack Goldfinger? Yeah.
No, Jeff.
Oh, Jeff. Jeff. Jeff.
Yeah. Jeff Papa. He said, well, lecture stuff that you haven't lectured before. And I said, name one thing I haven't lectured before. You know?
Well, you do certainly a lot of seminars or webinars.
Oh, yeah. I've done quite a few of those with Michael Weber.
Uh-huh.
He was at Beyond Brookledge, too. That was the event I was talking about that I did just before I started here. That was at the Mission Inn in Riverside. Just fantastic.
I was going to ask you a little bit more about that.
It's an eclectic collection of performers.
Like circus performers?
Performing artists. We had jugglers. We had singers. We had marionette artists. Visual artists.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, to me, it was a lot more fun than most magician conventions I go to. Reminded me more of my old cruise ship days, where everybody did something different.
Mm-hmm.
So it was kind of fun for everybody, you know, getting to watch...
And was it outdoors or what?
Outdoors, indoors. We had run of the hotel, basically.
So it's a hotel. It really wasn't like an outdoor festival
or
something.
No, it's a big, beautiful hotel. The Mission Inn, it's another landmark here. Most of the presidents have stayed there. It's where Richard Nixon got married, as a matter of fact.
Huh.
Kennedy stayed there. Just about everybody.
Mm-hmm.
Beautiful place. I was waiting for Zorro to walk out, though. It's all that kind of motif.
Yeah.
I do a lot of weddings there.
Hmm.
3 or 4 a day. But the place is so big, you never even know.
Now, is this an annual thing? And I assume it's...
I don't know if this is the second one they've done.
The fundraiser?
No, it's just...
It's for profit.
It's a group called Baby Tattooville that does a visual artist thing every year, and they decided to extend it. Because they always had the Brookledge Follies, the Brookledge or the Larson's place here.
Uh-huh.
And that's what this is beyond Brookledge. They wanted to extend it to a much bigger... Because Brookledge, they have a nice theater in there. But
I've never been to Brookledge. Now, Brookledge is the home, the Larson family home, basically.
Your mansion,
I assume it's pretty
big.
Pretty big place.
Immense.
Because
they have a full theater in there. So.
Milt and Bill Larson's father was an attorney.
Mm-hmm.
And quite successful, I guess. And so that was the house that they built and lived in.
Beautiful.
Growing up. Yeah, I've never been there.
It's not that far from here. Half a mile, maybe. Yeah, I was there once. Last time I was here, Erica brought me down. Mm-hmm. A bunch of us went down after we were done working. And,
but you worked there? They had the Brookledge following
no,
or something
no.
before, and then they moved?
No, she said she wanted to have, then she decided that she wanted me at this thing. I just do what she tells me to do. She calls me and she says, I want you if you're on Brookledge. Okay.
I'll be there.
Yeah. So I need to work at the Castle.
Yeah.
Okay. 10 minutes later, I'm booked at the Castle.
Just like that.
Yep.
Cool.
Well, the funny thing about the Castle, like the first time I worked here, it was pretty close to the first time you were here. It was about 82, 83 maybe.
Yep.
And Bill Larson was still alive then.
Mm-hmm.
And he liked my act a lot. Vernon liked me. That's why it hooked in well.
And you were doing mentalism back then, too, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Vernon loved my act. And
yeah. And the
Larson? Yeah. And Larson said to me after, he said, oh, Bob, yeah, you're really good. You can work here whenever you want. Just tell me when. I said, cool. So it could be good. I'm in for life at the Castle. Then Bill passes away. Mm-hmm. Then they have a new entertainment director, Ron Wilson, is years later.
Yep.
So I feel like going to the Castle again. So I'm told I have to audition. I said, no.
I've already got a name.
I can work here whenever I want. This was, well, Bill Larson's not around. I can't ask him. So I'm getting really peeved. A little bit, you know, like he doesn't know mentalists.
Uh-huh.
A lot of my major stuff was out by then. People knew who I was. I'm going, what do you?
There were so few mentalists back then. You know, mentalism was not big. I remember that when Banachek and I put out our very first product, and that was Steve Shaw's Radio Magic.
I remember
that.
And
that was in 97, no, 87, sorry, 1987. And I had contacted Joe Stevens at the time and said, you know, I'm trying to get an idea if you'd be interested in, you know, handling this and marketing it, we'll make it and we'll just sell it to you and you handle it. He said, nah, I said, I don't, you know, mentalism is not that big, you know, and that I, you know, I don't have much of a market for people, you know, buying mentalism type of stuff. And
yeah.
At the time, I think Max Maven was pretty much
the only well-known
name, yeah, at the time. So it wasn't until later that it just boomed and was like, it's now in everybody's act, which is interesting because as I'm at the Castle and I'm watching all these shows this week, every one of us, and I'm saying us including myself, even the close-up room, is including mentalism in her show.
I know. I can't say I like that. Well, I liked it better when there were very few of us, but it's the flavor of the week now.
Because of the exclusivity?
Yeah, we get a lot of kids coming into it, too, that don't have the first concept of how to do it and don't understand the difference between mentalism and mental magic and magic. They're different.
Mm-hmm. But most people, I think, don't recognize about the difficulty of scripting and having the right words and the right juxtaposition so that way that you're...
Too many people get into mentalism because they get the false impression, false idea that it's easy. That it's easy.
Yeah.
Well, so yeah, it's not. If you're doing straight mentalism, it's easy in the sense that, well, a lot of the moves I do, you'd hardly call easy, but doing moves in a mental act is the equivalent of cheating at a card table.
Okay.
You can't make a mistake. You can't be seen, or your credibility is shot.
Yeah.
I mean, I present myself as a mind reader. You can't drop something on the floor or screw something up and say the trick didn't work.
Right.
That's why I make it more equivalent to, it's one thing to do card tricks, another thing to sit there for the money and cheat.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah.
That's where it's really on the line. And a lot of them, I don't know, it's the flavor of the week. It's been that way. It had another big resurgence with Darren Brown in England.
That is huge. You know, in fact, tell me if this is true for you, but for our products with Banachek's things, that the UK seems to be the biggest consumer of, particularly outside the U.S., but I mean... Because of Darren Brown, that's what I was thinking. You find that also? There are a lot of people who are interested in mentalism in the U.K.?
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. I sell a lot of stuff there.
Yeah.
A lot of my books are sold in the U.K. Ireland, too, is pretty good. Like Keith Barry, too.
Well, yeah, Keith Barry's over it, yeah.
Mm-hmm. He's actually had some more success in the United States than Darren has. He's had a couple specials over here. I had a short Discovery series, too.
Why do you think that? I remember that. I've seen them. Why do you think
I consulted on that Discovery show.
Hmm.
But, I don't know. Personality plays better, I guess, for an American audience.
I wonder. You know, some, you know...
Of course, the Irish accent doesn't hurt, you know.
But but I think it has something to do, perhaps, with the with humor. You know, some things... Mm-hmm. When I was lecturing in England, some of my jokes didn't go over, and it just didn't translate. There was something lost in translation with British humor coming over to the UK.
That could have something to do with it.
and the congeniality, you know, of the individual. You know, I really like Darren Brown personally, and obviously he's very successful, but he has a completely different style, and mm-hmm. he's not a jokester by any means. You know, I don't.
Well, the other thing is now that mentalism has gone in a different direction because of Darren Brown. He uses the, you know, the psychological type persona,
uh-huh.
NLP, body language, subliminal perception, that sort of thing, which was actually popularized a long time ago by Ned Rutledge.
Mm-hmm.
Remember, Ned had the idea, I use my five senses to create the illusion of a six.
Yeah.
I've always been a traditionalist. I'm a mind reader. I'm in the Dunninger type mold. But
do you believe that you have to know what your skill or your sense or your power is?
Oh, yeah.
So, okay.
I write about that extensively.
Yeah.
You have a backstory.
Yeah.
What it is you can do, what the limitations are. Mm-hmm. You have, I believe you have to be consistent in your effects.
Mm-hmm.
Even you don't have to explain any of this to the audience, but audiences will pick up inconsistencies, logical inconsistencies.
Right. But if your power is predictions, mm-hmm. you know, that I know what's going to be happening, then your show can become a series of predictions. Here's an envelope, or here's a deck of cards, and inside there.
Predictions are the hardest thing to do, actually.
Yeah, it is.
Convincingly, because I do very few.
Hmm.
When I present predictions, I present them more as a form of mental coercion. Because my ability is I can project thoughts and receive thoughts.
Okay.
On an imaginary screen.
Okay.
So I can get a prediction to the effect where I can project something into your mind that I want you to do.
Uh-huh.
Not, you know, not like physically force you to do it, but
sure.
implant the thought in your mind.
Okay.
That's consistent. But you'll rarely see me do metal bending or anything like that. How is that consistent with what my premise?
There are inconsistencies that they will spot. And it's like, wait a minute, that doesn't quite fit inside there.
Right.
You know, I once saw a guy who was doing a very heavy kind of a show, and he was doing mentalism, and he was doing kind of almost a spook show thing also, you know, with a floating zombie with a skull's head and some things as far as... But then he, in the middle of the show, did a Lester Lake guillotine with comedy and all of the hack lines and everything like that, and it's like... What the heck was that all about? You know, it was not comedy relief because I wasn't relieved. I mean, I was into this character, and all of a sudden, he's Mr. Clown Happy Circus Guy. And
right.
It's like, wow.
That what is, are you? It's like...
It's right. He broke the plane of illusion.
It would be like if I started doing balloon animals in the middle of my act, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. So, you were saying, we were talking about some of the kinds of things that... That you're doing,
mm-hmm.
Specifically, yeah, some pre-show work.
Which I don't do here. I do it in my larger shows.
Really? So you're not doing it here?
Pre-show? No, here it's too much work.
Okay.
I like to walk on and perform.
Okay. You just stepped away there for a minute. Go get some of you right back.
Yeah, right. I'm paper towels, that's all.
Okay. But you were saying that you like to do a something in other shows, but why not here?
Well, three shows a night, back to back, I don't really, and I really don't like being seen outside talking to too many people before I come on.
Uh-huh.
I like to come on like you've never seen me before. And I emphasize that we haven't met or done anything.
I like that for banquets, when I'm a performer, and they say, well, we'll have you know, a meal for you and have you join us.
I wouldn't do that.
I don't like to do that.
I'll mingle afterwards.
Yeah, I kind of want to be a surprise. Now, mm-hmm. I will say that I do like to do close-up as a magician, walk around, because they get to know me. They know my personality. Mm-hmm. They know I'm a regular guy. I'm not going to embarrass them when I call them up on stage later.
Mm-hmm.
And it does give you an opportunity, obviously, to do a pre-show and everything. But that's one thing. I don't want to be sitting up, you know, on the table with the rest of the people, you know, and having meal. Because
well, I don't like sitting there eating with everybody before the show, because I'm guaranteed to spill dessert on my outfit.
Exactly, yeah.
So.
Yeah. Or you're never going to get to finish eating because they're always asking you, when did you start in magic?
Well, that or they don't know what you do, the people you're sitting up there with. And they mm-hmm. will ask because they don't.
Sure.
I don't like explaining what I do. I'd rather show it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm a mind reader. Oh, well, what am I thinking?
Yeah, just wait until later. I'm sure you get that question. Do you have a joke or something you come back with somebody whenever they say, what am I thinking?
Well, you see, if they've seen my act, if they don't ask that. Because they know there's a process.
Yeah.
Basically, no, it doesn't work like that. You have to project in a very certain way for me to be able to pick it up. And see, that makes me less threatening, too. I mean, really, do you want to be with somebody who knew everything you were thinking?
No.
So if you're convincing enough, that can actually be a threat. People won't want to volunteer.
Right.
Mm-hmm. But if there are self-imposed limitations of what you do and how you go about doing it, then not only becomes more plausible, but it gives you an out for all those things.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's a cooperative thing that we're doing. Where if you, you know, if you're concentrating on something that's not true, I'm not going to know.
Right.
Tell you what you're thinking of, but.
Yeah, right, right. Well, going back to pre-show, you were saying that there were some things you're going to be doing in an upcoming webinar.
Mm-hmm. A webinar on pre-show.
Yeah.
But I have a much broader definition of pre-show than most people do. A lot of people get it mixed up with instant staging, dual reality. I don't even like the phrase dual reality. That's pretty recent. That's been in the last 10 years people talk about that.
Mm-hmm.
We used to just talk about it as a form of doublespeak. The person that you've prepared something with before the show will agree with what you're saying because it's literally true, but the impression that the audience is getting is somewhat different than the impression they have.
Okay.
Like before the show, I had to think of any word in the English language. Is that correct?
Yes.
Well, most people think, you ask them to think of a word in the English language. You never mention that you had a dictionary that they opened
mm-hmm.
to help them find a word.
Mm-hmm.
If they do, there's no really big deal if they did mention it. I would go, yes, in fact, I gave you a dictionary of the English language, right? So you could choose anything, and that wouldn't be just a random. Yeah, they would agree. But the actual details of what happened are left to the audience's imagination.
And you want to obfuscate that, I think, as much as possible.
Yeah, I asked you to think of any word in the English language. Is that correct? Yes. And I always ask yes or no questions, so they won't elaborate.
So you actually tell them in front of the audience, I should say.
The audience
hears you say, I talked to you before the show.
I don't lie about the show.
Mm-hmm.
I want to be honest here. I did speak to you briefly before the show. Is that correct? And I asked you to think of a word in the English language, any word? Yes, you did not write it down. You did not tell it to anyone.
Mm-hmm.
I asked you merely to focus on it and keep it in your mind. Is that correct? Yes.
So that will eliminate any thought of someone thinking you'd stooge them.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Well, I don't have a problem with people thinking I'm stooging only because I use so many participants during my show. The only conclusion would be I must have stooged everybody.
Everyone, yeah.
You know, the one guy I didn't use is the only one not in on it.
Okay.
Yeah. But to me, and pre-show goes way beyond that to me. It goes to everything that you have to do before a show.
Mm-hmm.
Casing the audience, checking the bad sound spots.
When you're walking out into the audience.
Listening to people, finding out who the drunks are, who to avoid.
Mm-hmm. Do you not like to work with drunks? I kind of like working with
drunks.
I personally
prefer working the late parlor. They have me early parlor this week. I mm-hmm. like the audience really prime.
Yeah. Yeah,
they can be a problem sometimes, but I'm used to those kind of problems.
I like to handle them.
So I feel comfortable.
Sure.
I don't like really uptight audiences.
Yeah, I want to be a little bit loose.
Mm-hmm.
I think you're right. I've had a sloppy drunk on stage a time or two, and I have intentionally chosen the person. Not that I'm trying to embarrass them, but I think we can play with each other a lot more, and it'd be a lot more fun.
Well, that's why I watched them before the show, though. I do want to know who's falling down.
Yeah.
Because I'm going to ask him to do something that requires some thought, you know?
Yeah.
But
as far as the other pre-shows, so that is a little bit different philosophy in which you actually will tell people during the time of the show. The audience hears you say, well, we had already talked. Whereas most will try to...
Well, some pre-show I do for the whole audience. When I'm doing a Q&A sometimes in a club, I'll go around all the tables before you, handing out papers and pencils.
Yeah.
Some people write down thoughts, things. They know I'm going to appear.
Sure.
Or I'll have my assistant do it. Like, if I have Denise with me or something, she'll go around and pass them around. And the little table attached on the table.
But you're not taking...
What to do.
But you're not...
That's pre-show.
It is pre-show, but you're actually not getting all those answers from everyone. I mean, you're just...
No.
You're just using a few
anyhow.
I'm stealing
stuff like crazy.
Are you?
All right, yeah. Mm-hmm. Stealing, switching papers, doing everything.
Yeah,
you know.
Okay.
By the time I walk out, I have
everything you need.
15 or 20 items.
Yeah. I think the hardest part of, speaking of Q&A, is trying to read what they wrote back to them so it doesn't sound as if that you were just reading back to them what they just wrote.
What I do, a technique I use a lot, is I'll have them write specific bits of information. Pretty much that was the way Dunninger approached it. But instead of questions, I'll say, think of the address you were brought up at, or think of this, or whatever.
Yeah.
But later on, when I'm reiterating, because I'll pass out more papers just before, or at the beginning of the show, anybody who didn't get one, write anything you like, ask the question. Now I start talking about questions, even though a lot of people weren't asked to write questions.
Yeah.
But I started to just change it a little bit. That's, I guess you call that a form of dual reality.
Yeah.
So now when I get, say, an address, I say 44 Elm Street is what I've got.
Yeah.
That now gets given back to them as if it's a question. You're asking me, am I correct about a place where you once lived? Is that right? Yes. And you want to know if I could tell you the exact address? Is that right? So now the audience is getting the impression that they wrote, what was my address?
What is my, as opposed to what it actually is.
All right, now, concert, you do remember the number?
Yeah.
Of course, that's what they wrote.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yes? Concentrate just on the number and give that.
Well, that's the dual reality.
Yeah. To give back the information that was a statement as if they had asked a question.
Yeah.
That's how you get around it.
Okay.
And so you're thinking of 44 Elm Street. No.
Yeah.
That was a Dunninger's technique. Listen to his old radio shows. You hear him doing that all the time.
I've only done a Q&A once, and I was not happy with my results. It was a small group, and I was... That's not something you can really rehearse. That you know, and
no,
practice.
No, I've done quite a lot of work on Q&A.
How do you start?
Three teleseminars with that. You just do it. It's like learning muscle reading.
Okay.
And hypnosis. You get out there and do it.
Yeah. I guess it's like watch steel. You know, I mean, you
I had
that,
I did some live workshops on it where we have a bowl of questions in the middle of the floor where we're doing the workshop.
Yeah.
Just questions I made up and wrote down myself.
Uh-huh.
They're in a bowl. And the challenge for all the participants is by the end of the workshop, they should be able to walk up there to the bowl cold, not having stolen anything or
right.
done anything,
right.
and do a whole Q&A act
mm-hmm.
from that bowl. And I discuss with them how to get one ahead, how to get two ahead, how to get one behind, how to answer questions that aren't even in the bowl.
Yeah.
Hmm. How to shotgun the rest of the audience so you'll get questions, you know, that weren't written.
Right.
And that's what I call jazz Q&A.
Mm-hmm.
Or basically creating the act as I'm going along.
Mm-hmm.
Then sometimes I'll take my fourth dimensional telepathy routine, my three envelope test, and I'll intersperse that throughout the Q&A as a series of special tests.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That's why those three are sealed envelopes that somebody's holding. Those are the special
yeah.
tests we're going to do.
Okay.
And that way I get a conclusion to the Q&A act because the last portion of the envelope test is a picture duplication.
Mm-hmm.
So most Q&A acts don't have an ending.
That's...
Oh, well, we're out of time.
Yep, okay, I think I've answered. I can't get everybody.
The drawing duplication, word shown.
Yeah.
And that's the end. It has a visual difference.
So do you try to get a answer where that you have secreted beforehand that is something you can duplicate, or do you tell one of your people that...
I use my regular method that I use in my show, in fourth dimensional telepathy.
Okay.
It's an outright paper in front of everybody.
Okay, so it's not pre-show at all?
No.
Okay.
But... The other problem with Q&A act is the reason Q&A is so powerful is because everybody is potentially involved.
Mm-hmm.
But even if you're answering questions that nobody wrote.
Yeah.
So the audience, everybody's involved. So you're going to have much more attention. It's not like a one-on-one effect. I call those minor effects. We're using one volunteer or two.
Yeah.
But everybody else is just a passive observer. But when you work in the whole audience, I call those major effects. It uses the entire audience. It has nothing to do with the relative impact and the effect or anything. It has to do with the number of people involved.
Yes, I understand.
The problem, though, that comes up with an act like that, especially with a large audience, is inevitably somebody's going to be disappointed. You're not going to get their question.
Right, right.
And I resolved that with a routine I developed that's in print now. It's called Scorpio's Message, where people don't just write information. They also write their birthday.
Okay.
So this is kind of a little out of character for me, but it really goes by. People don't... Scorpio, I have a message for you. Now,
okay.
I might get very specific with somebody that I stole, but
yeah.
during the course of the act, I'll hit every zodiac sign once.
So everyone is involved.
And a lot of times, I'll just give generalized
yeah.
comments and things like that. So even if I don't get your question, the impression is I might have said something to you.
Right, that's right.
Gemini.
Yeah.
I'm getting the impression that...
Yes.
That works very well.
Right.
And I developed that routine just because I wanted to use that line.
Pretty amazing.
Scorpio, I have a message for you.
First of all, that I'm a Scorpio and my wife's a Gemini.
There you go.
You are incredible.
That's how good I am. That's the other rule. Take credit for everything.
You should.
That's what was happening in my show last night. Why I said it was one of the best ones I've done. Everything I was saying was right.
It was right on hit. Perfect.
I was
hit.
Starting to say outrageous things just to be wrong.
Yeah.
And I was right.
You're right.
Well, yeah, and you try to do that without laughing.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah, yeah.
It's kind of fun.
Well, that's a really, I like that idea, because everybody, you're going to hit 1/12 of the audience at one time or another, and then you hit the next one saying, okay, got a message for the, yeah, I like that.
A woman last night had a dog named Bibi, a Doberman. And So I have her up on the stage, and I'm writing down what I think her dog's name is, and I'm commenting, this is not like a normal name I'd associate with this type of dog. You had two dogs, didn't you? I say that a lot. She goes, yeah. They had similar names. And I just had a boy. The other one was named Bobo, am I right? She goes, whoa. It was.
Yeah.
Just concentrate on this one. And that's when I revealed Bibi.
Yeah.
But then that was the wall.
Really?
It was similar to this one. So I said, Bobo. That's right.
Yeah, if you would have been wrong, it's like, well, I tried.
Yeah, so what? Yeah. See, I don't care if I'm
now,
wrong.
That's an important thing, I think, you know, that some people might be a little bit afraid of doing mentalism. You talk about that's kind of like the thing of the week that everyone, you know, is getting into mentalism because it's an easy thing. But other people might think, well, I don't like to do mentalism because I don't like to walk on the edge. I want to make sure that my tricks work every time, you know. And mentalism doesn't necessarily have to be 100%. And I don't think that it should be.
There are built-in limitations, like I said. I can only pick... Sometimes I misinterpret what I'm getting.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
You have an image in your mind, I might come up with something. I had somebody once draw a picture of a sneaker.
Okay.
But the picture looked just like an old-time locomotive.
Okay, I can see that, kind of, yeah.
So I thought it was.
Yeah.
But at the end, the similarity was drastic. It was clear to everybody that I had gotten it wrong, but that I had gotten the image right.
Yeah.
The general shape and everything. Mm-hmm. That I like when that kind of stuff happens. But again, it shows me misinterpreting something.
Yeah.
Which is kind of neat.
I had misinterpreted something. I was doing a trick from one of your earlier books, in which did you... do a switch to billet, and you know where that someone is going to be saying, you know, name any place, and then you name any person, and you know the couple, and they've been together, and usually you can tie the two together. What's the name of what's that routine called?
Which one?
It's with a billet, and so that way if you have a person write down the name of some destination where they have
that's my name place routine.
Yes.
Where one gets selected out of the two, the other one's destroyed, and then you reveal the
that's book. It. Yeah. Yeah, you burn it up or whatever. Mm-hmm. Yes, exactly.
One of my favorite routines.
I love that routine, and one of the first times I was doing it was for a Mensa group. But it was difficult to read because this is when I learned not to use pencils because it was hard for me to see. It was not a number two pencil. It was too light, and I couldn't read. It looked
don't
like Abe Lincoln or something.
Don't use the wrong pencils.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I had people writing so tiny last night. That I actually said, I'm having a hard time getting, and I did get it, because I know exactly where to stand to get the peak. And I have new bifocals that I can see like really good with.
Yeah.
And when I opened the billet to misread it, I know the subtlety I'll use, because it's really not there. You know, I'm misreading, I'm working one ahead, but I'll put my thumb over the writing.
Okay.
And I'll actually turn the paper right to them.
Yeah.
Because she's standing on stage next to me with a spotlight in her face.
Yeah.
I know she can't see her own paper up there where I am.
Yeah.
So I open it, put it right in front of her face, and said, what does that say? And my thumb is covering what's actually there. Well, she already knows what she wrote.
Yeah.
And now the audience is getting the idea that she's looking straight at her own paper.
Yeah.
That's a cool subtlety. I use that a lot.
So she is saying something that she can't see, but she has already written.
If I asked you, what does this say, and you just wrote it.
Yeah.
Were you going to have to read it to find out what you wrote?
You don't
tell me.
Right.
Especially if you can't see it.
Why would you even want to look at it? Like, I know what I wrote.
But I'm holding it in front of you. No, I should show it to people in the front row, too.
Yeah.
I don't see anything. My thumb's over the writing.
Right.
I do a lot of little things like that. But, I tell you I have to finish this later, because I ate already before.
Yeah, okay. Save
but I had to have a hamburger.
That was a pretty good burger, don't you?
Excellent burger.
I tell you, In-N-Out does a good job. And the fries, I like because they're not too oily.
They're not soggy, either.
Exactly. They're crisp. I like that.
Yeah.
Very good.
They'll be good and soggy by the time I eat them later, though.
Later on. So, once again, just going to try to wrap up over here. You were going to be doing a lecture for this group then soon, then you're going to be heading back to...
I'm back in home for...
And you're in Washington
10
State?
Days. Yeah, I'm back. Then I'm off to Baltimore for the annual meeting in the mines for the PEA.
Okay.
And then while I'm there, I'm doing a lecture at Denny's in Baltimore.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Danny and Lee's, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
So that's where I'll be at the end of the month.
Are you working any other conventions or someplace that people
are going
to be able
year.
To see you? Other
not
than
this
the
year.
Convention,
no.
I guess?
Not this year.
Okay.
Go back to writing.
Working on another book, huh?
I don't perform as much as I used to.
What are you working on? What book? What are you
Well, we're working on, like I say, the pre-show Yeah. Tell seminar we're doing. We're doing another compilation where I'm rewriting a lot of my older e-books and stuff. Yeah. I have a lot of material that I write under my pseudonym of Dr. Crow. He does all the bizarre hoodoo stuff. And he says things that I would be uncomfortable saying myself.
Okay.
He's extremely rude and opinionated. And he's 112 years old, so you let him get by with
okay,
what he wants.
Yeah.
And he's a con man. He's a hustler.
Okay.
He's proud of it.
Okay. So it's a character that you have developed.
Yeah, Dr. Crow, yeah. The creator of Hoodoo Brew. That's his own beer that I sell you.
So, have you performed as that character?
No.
Or you just have written, you write as
him? No, he appears in writings only.
Okay.
There are a lot of photographs of him out there.
Are you? Oh, really? Okay.
Oh, yeah.
Now, have you thought about making that into some sort of a play or...
I've had him argue with Dr. Bob. That's my other alter ego.
Okay.
The Right Reverend Dr. Bob and Dr. Crow. Well, they've been cellmates, too. There's a lot of stories about the two of them. Dr. Bob is the one where, you know, marijuana and all that are sacraments in his church, you know, before they started legalizing, he just made it a sacrament.
You know? Sounds kind of like a... what was that?
They don't use holy water. They use Irish mist.
My mind just went blank. Who had the tossed out deck?
David Hoyt's
church. Who was at the Fellowship of
Universal
Church?
Oh, he had the first Universal Church of Knowledge. Yeah, he gave me the original letterhead for that. I could use it. I was using that for a long time. Universal Church of Knowledge. That wasn't my signature on the cafe for the longest time.
Oh, was that right?
Before I finally got out, somebody put my signature.
what the acronym was.
Yeah.
Yeah. Interesting. All right, well, I'm going to start to wrap up. I know that we'll go on and probably talk some more over here, but I thought we'll kind of shut this down, and that I have asked you perhaps in the past what your magic word is. Do you recall what your phrase or philosophy or your what's important to you?
Stay connected.
Stay connected.
That's Dr. Bob's, actually. There's a button that says stay connected.
Okay. Well, and you're connected on Facebook now, too.
There you go. I'm connected.
People can find you. You get socially connected. Very good. Thanks a lot. That was
thank you, Scott.
Bob Cassidy. And this is Scott Wells for the Magic Word, saying Scotty out. Scott Wells for the magicpodcast.com. And we're... thanks very much, Fred. My butler, Fred King, is handling that over there. Then right now, out front of the parlor, prestidigitation here with John Carney. John, you're not working this week. You're just kind of hanging out, just kind of passing through.
That's right. Is my hair combed? It's a podcast.
Not really. So, yeah, okay.
It doesn't matter.
You don't even have to dress.
It's a little must. I'm not up to dress code.
Yeah. You need to straighten your tie there a little bit.
Yeah, well, whatever.
Who cares?
Right.
So I was going to ask you, the reason I wanted to turn this on was just to find out about your videos and things. You had some great projects that you have had where it's like you subscribe to this and then every quarter or so. What is the reason? What's new that you're working on or what are you offering?
Well, I had this thing called Carney 2013, so every month for a year in 2013 I did a different subject. I did the Silent Mora Balls and Net. I did The Vanishing Birdcage. I did Leon's Haunted Dollhouse. I did the Tips on Classics like The Egg Bag and then Cups and Balls and things like that. And so that was last year. So that's done.
Right.
But now I'm splitting them up into individual lessons and putting those out. So that's when I...
Was that something that you had like an online video or was that something that you sent out like you did before with the actual hard copy videos?
No. It's online video. Okay. So you own it. It's yours to do, you know, watch as many times as you want and whatever.
Just like a DVD.
But it's through Nicholas Knight. You remember Nicholas
Nick,
Knight?
Sure. Yeah.
He has a company called Revisit and it's basically a viewer
password.
Like a Kindle or something like that. But you get an app and you watch it in this viewer.
In that environment so that way you can't share it. I mean, it's really password protected.
You can't share it. It's like got your electronic fingerprint on it.
Yeah.
So you can identify. But, you know, but mostly you don't have to store it. I don't have to mail it. I don't have to fill out customs forms.
That's
or
a cool
anything.
Thing. Yeah. It's you just create it and they just buy it.
Yeah. And you can change the product too. So if you have an update on something, you can go back, like it's an ebook or something, you say, oh, there's some new information about this or that, or here's a variation. You can put all the variations in, change the product, and it changes everybody's product, whoever has bought it. It changes it
automatically.
Yeah, it changes it when they sign in. They get the fresh product. You know.
Wow.
So there's a lot of neat things about it.
Because I know that with Banish Magazine, that they have that. I think using, of course, that's a free thing anyhow to anybody. But you can also get that, you know, to revisit.
Right. And Steinmeier and Mike Caveney and lots of other people have magic ebooks and different products.
And they found that's really.
I think I'm the only video guy there so far.
Yeah. So Raphael, you just got Raphael Benatar. He just finished. You got one more show or two more? What are you doing here?
Two more
shows.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
How are the crowds?
Oh, wonderful. Great.
Yeah.
Enjoying it.
I got to say that accent is so fake, though.
Yeah.
He's actually from New Jersey.
Yeah. You can work on that Spanish.
I don't know where he gets this thing, this continental,
South American
Spanish, Latin gentleman.
Yeah.
But,
it makes you sound
so
suave, but in reality, we know.
Yeah.
Now you guys,
hey, yo, we over here. That's how he talks.
It's very, very weird.
Yeah. Now you guys know also when you hear that this, he's just putting on an act. Excellent. So I was going to ask you also, John, what is the next thing that you're going to do? That was 2013. So what's happening in 14 and 15? What are you doing then right now?
Well, I don't have any specific products.
You're brushing up your act for FISM, right?
I'm probably going. Well, not really. I have a book on misdirection. Just a small little book on misdirection coming out. A few other things, but nothing. No big announcement.
Nothing. Well, why am I spending my time here talking to you about this?
I thought you had
something cool to say.
They can check out the Kearney 2013. That's the video series, Kearney 2013. If they go to KearneyMagic.com, they'll see that.
Yeah, yeah. So are you traveling a lot? Or are you doing like a one-man show or working on anything then right now?
Doing as many theater shows as I can manage, you know. And
Didn't I just see something about Mr. Misto recently that was in the news?
I don't know what it was. Was he like, did the police, were the police involved?
As a blotter, blotter or something.
There's a SWAT team outside of his trailer home.
No, I thought I got something from Mel Kintz, you know, that was talking about an article that he picked up from a magazine or newspaper or something, and they were talking about Mr. Miss within the last month or so. Would there have been something that rings a bell with you that you saw?
Yeah, I don't know what that would be.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't know what that is. But, yeah, but I do the show around. I do little theaters here and there, and, you know, it's not a huge moneymaker, but it's fun to do.
You were doing some stuff back in the Midwest a while back. I mean, like one man.
Right, there's a little town called Galena, Illinois, and they had a lot of tourists going through there. So
they had a nice theater in there.
I rented a theater for like 5 months.
Oh, you four-walled the thing?
Four-walled it for 5 months and just took it as it came, you know. And it was a great experience learning, because I want to learn about how to run a theater, how to sell tickets, how to organize the thing, and how to organize the program, and, you know, and just learn a little bit about the business. And so now I'm just kind of looking at different locations that I could do it in, either permanently or over a season or something like that. So it
so
was
look at really
kind
more
of an experiment there.
More of a learning experience than it was trying to be a profitable kind of a thing.
I made a decent salary, but I didn't come home with like a huge nest egg or anything.
You
like
didn't buy a DeLorean or
but it was a steady salary for the summer, and you know, it worked out great. But the ultimate goal was to find a place where I want to live for the rest of my life, and set up a theater there and do something like that. Yeah.
Have you got a place in mind as far as a region? I mean, east, west, I mean, midwest. You know, that I've talked to some people, and they, for an example, would like to have some place on a lake, or they want to be near a golf course, or they would like to have a, you know, in the midwest, or that they kind of like a beach, or they want to be in Hawaii. I mean, is there any place?
Well, I like nature, and I like the country. I'm not a Vegas guy at all, but there has to be enough people there to actually support it. So I haven't actually decide. I looked at Lake Tahoe and a few other places.
Lake Tahoe would be a great place.
I love Lake Tahoe. But I'm still looking for a place. I haven't found a place.
And then what you do, you'd like to settle there and just kind of not retire, but just kind of use that as your new home.
Yeah, I mean, it's like...
Because L.A. is now...
I'm thinking of quality of life and where would I enjoy living, and then where could I live where I wouldn't have to travel all the time.
You know, right.
I can make a living at home and sleep in my own bed and not go through TSA and luggage and taxis and airplanes and all that kind of stuff.
Kind of a hassle.
Yeah.
It seems to be getting kind of loud around here, so we'll start to kind of wrap up over here. It's about showtime. That's right. John, thanks very much. I appreciate it.
All right.
Just real quickly, my podcast is called The Magic Word. What is your magic word? What is it that's important? What's your philosophy of life? What do you live by? What's important?
Word.
Or phrase or word? Or
believe.
Believe. I like that.
Believe and create and have fun.
Whoa. I love
three
it.
Words, but, you know,
yes,
a lot to do.
A lot to do. Very good. Thanks a lot, John Carney. This is Scott Wells for The Magic Word. Scotty out. Scott Wells for the MagicWordPodcast.com, and we're still over here at the parlor, kind of quieted down a little bit since we were just talking to John Carney. It was pretty crazy over here before they came into Raphael's show. And now I'm speaking with David Deeble, one of the original of the Long Island Mystics.
Long Beach Mystics.
Long Beach, okay.
No, we're not that tough. Okay. We didn't have knives or anything like that.
Like those guys.
Yeah, right.
Okay. And I had first met you and saw you perform as one of the Mystics last year at the Magic Live in Vegas. And I guess the reason I hadn't seen or met you or known you before is because you've been working cruise ships for a long time. Is that right?
Yeah, that may be one reason. I've also been living in Germany for
the
last 5 years. Up until last January, I've been living in Germany where my wife is from.
Okay.
So,
whereabouts in Germany? What part?
Düsseldorf area, so northwest, up near Holland.
And you have you speak German fluently, I assume.
No, far. No, definitely not fluently.
Ein Bier, that's about it. Huh?
Yeah, okay. Kann ein bisschen Deutsch sprechen. A little bit of German,
Yeah.
But I can have, you know, simple conversations with my in-laws and things like that.
Can they speak English?
Not the older ones, generally. My brother-in-law, of course. You know.
Yeah.
Young people out there generally speak English, and the older you get, the...
Now, living in Germany, were you doing any magic juggling, or what were you...
I did. I did a college show in Holland. I did a lot of expat shows for the British and Irish diaspora throughout Germany. I did some USO shows in Stuttgart, and I did a lot of cruise ships in the Mediterranean and the Baltic.
Mm-hmm.
And then some corporate gigs on the East Coast of the U.S. So a bit of everything.
I've wondered about that. Whenever that you're going to be actually cruising with foreign-speaking people, is there a problem or an issue? Do they have translators, or is English a good language that they speak?
Yeah, well, it depends. I mean, for me, my act is all audio. So although I'm doing lots of stuff, if you don't understand what I'm saying, you're really not going to get much satisfaction.
But you've got a lot of funny gags and jokes and things.
Yeah, sure. But they have these cruises where they call them international audiences, which basically means they don't speak English.
Okay.
I've done cruises where it was all Spanish and Italian, you know, notoriously non-English speaking audiences, and the kids are running around on transition cruises, 4-day cruises from like Lisbon to Barcelona that cost like $300 or something.
Okay.
So everybody from Lisbon and Barcelona buys them.
It's the Walmart ship.
Yeah. So for me, this is not exactly my wheelhouse audience.
Okay. Yeah.
That's definitely a factor, is what I'm saying.
Yeah. So I would think that there are a lot of nuances and things that you would say that were just kind of some asides or jokes or something that even if they understood English, that they wouldn't understand the sarcasm or whatever little...
Well, yeah, I don't slip on banana peels or anything like that.
Yeah, exactly.
I do a lot of topical stuff and stand-up comedy and... patter, you know.
Did you work in the comedy clubs for a while?
I did a bit in the early 90s. I moved to Chicago, suburban Chicago in the 90s, and I...
SCTV or Second City?
I worked comedy clubs all around Michigan and downstate Illinois and Indiana, all of the zanies in Chicago area.
Now, when you say downstate Illinois, that's my home area.
Is that right?
I went to school at SIU, Southern Illinois University.
All right.
I'm from Salem.
I did Normal.
Yep.
Tina Leonard, hi.
Hi, Tina.
I did Normal and just on the bowling alley gigs. And,
yeah.
You know, where you're in the little room off the bowling alley there. Comedy nights.
I've seen those like at the Madison Hotel or something, you know, or the Holiday Inn lounge.
I remember suburban St. Louis.
Yeah.
Cadillac, all around, you know, winter tour of Michigan once it went, you know, for me it was frightening as a good Lord, when I think back about it, I had California license plates, and my car was like spinning around in the Michigan winter. And,
You weren't used to driving in ice, I'm sure.
No. I don't miss those days. I'm not that hardy material.
What kind of great experience did you have? I mean, did you have an interesting story or something?
In Chicago?
Yeah.
Not that I remember, but my memory is so bad. I remember I used to get... I'd arrange a limo in those days. I mean, they wouldn't just call it a limo. What do you call it? You'd arrange a car to pick you up. I remember getting up very early. My screen door wasn't frozen to my... frozen me in and get driven to O'Hare. But I don't know. It was a long time ago. So.
But the comedy clubs would provide you with lodging. I mean, they had like a motel
apartment. Yeah, a loft, you know, the headliner loft and the feature act. And, you know, if I was headlining, I'd take the bigger one. And if I was the feature act.
And you
act,
moved your way up to being the feature act.
Well, I never made it my bread and butter. I started doing, mainly it started going down to the Comedy Magic Club. It's the last comedy club the only comedy club I still work regularly.
Is that Hermosa Beach?
Comedy Magic Club in Hermosa Beach.
Yeah.
You know, I still did Snickers. They had taped a TV show there in Fort Wayne and some clubs. But I by then I started doing a lot more cruise ships and private shows, things like that. I was never, I was not spending 2 weeks a year in Dayton, Ohio, or anything like that.
And so you were in Germany, and you moved back here then? How long ago?
Yeah, my wife got a green card last year, so we moved back last January.
Okay, and you're living now in the L.A. area? Or?
Back in L.A., in my hometown, Long Beach.
And so what are you doing?
I'm working. I just partnered with P2 Photography on a new video about my injury. A lot of people don't know this. People ask me how I came up with these different ideas for my act, and what happened was used to be a conventional juggler, but I was riding a tall unicycle one day through a doorway, and I hit my head. And ever since then, my right arm stopped functioning.
Couldn't pick up things? Couldn't grip?
Yeah, couldn't throw anything underhand. Like, think of throwing a horseshoe.
Okay.
Could no longer do it. So P2 Photography just created this video on how I evolved and how this injury has informed my craft and steered me in more of a direction of comedy than what is... where I started out as a more conventional juggler.
Okay.
So the video has been doing that, doing very well. I was mentioned in the New York Times last Tuesday I grabbed the wrong bags at Singapore Airport recently and made the New York Times. So
grabbed the wrong
bags. The bags at the airport.
Did you get some that had the bomb in
it
or something?
I was tired. I saw some bags that vaguely resembled mine. And the thing is, Singapore, you know, you can't bring just anything. So I get back to, I get to the cruise ship where I'm working. And all I want to do is take my suit out of the bag and go to sleep. So I want my suit hanging so I can sleep.
Yeah, sure, of course.
And I open my suitcase, and there's like a bunch of Russian cigarettes and a Ukrainian English dictionary.
You see, I don't remember packing that.
Now I am naked and exhausted at this point.
Yeah.
I put my clothes back on. I realize I have to drive back to the airport, take a cab back.
Oh, my God.
No, I'm going through the cruise ship security and all this, and they escort me at the airport back to the lost bags, find my bag. I apologize for taking the wrong bag. And I try to leave. In Singapore, they put your stuff on the x-ray after you leave, when you're going into the city. And, of course, they see my machete there. That's not real, but it looks real.
Yeah.
And so now I've got the police escorting me to a room where they give me a special pass to bring this machete into Singapore, but I have to bring it right on the ship. Yeah, and it was just a big... big, totally self-imposed nightmare. The funny thing is, 2 weeks later, I'm switching buses between Heathrow and what's the other British airport?
Gatwick.
And a woman ahead of my bag didn't arrive. And I was supposed to grab my bag and take it on the bus. So I filled out a report, went on the bus, and the woman ahead of me getting on the bus has my bag. She had grabbed my bag. So I'm on the other end. I pointed out to her. I felt very bad because now she has to go back through a secure area.
Yeah.
She may miss her flight given she has to change airports. So, I got some of my own medicine.
Well, you know, I remember one time my son picked up a bag that looked remarkably like ours, and he was wanting something out of it before we actually walked out of the airport. And he opened it up, and there was some granny panties, some lady that must have been a size 50 or something. And he pulled these out and he said, "This isn't our luggage." And he just like, "Ooh, put that back." Zipped it back up and threw it back over there.
Back on the carousel.
Back on the carousel.
Well, yeah. Yeah, at least he had the good sense not to leave the airport with it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I feel bad for the guy who might have grabbed my bag. You know, he opens it up and there's like a plunger and a machete and a stuffed animal and a billiard ball and all this crazy stuff.
And this was the Ukrainian guy, probably.
Yeah, right. There's probably some contractor in Singapore.
Yeah.
Or something.
Exactly.
Or what if he was a drug dealer or something, you know?
Say, yeah, he was in the underground.
Imagine if I'm sitting there with the death penalty in Singapore. I grabbed the wrong bag.
Yeah, some smuggler of some sort. Right. So now that you're back here, that you're planning on doing what from here?
Well, I've been keeping really busy. I was here at the Magic Castle earlier in the year. I made my debut at the California Magic Club up in Martinez, California.
Mm-hmm.
Dated the Comedy Magic Club, and I've just been, working all around the country, doing some...
A lot of corporate
corporate work.
Okay.
I'm in the Dakotas a lot now, and
Dakotas, I mean, are those clubs?
I did a show, no, I did a show for the North Dakota, Chiropractors Association.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
And then I got a show at the University of Mary there this summer.
Mm-hmm.
But all around in a lot of California. What's that?
You do a lot of college shows?
Not really, no.
Okay.
That is one, but it's pretty rare.
Okay, I just thought maybe that might be it.
No, I've never done like a NACA showcase or anything that. Yeah.
Okay.
I think I'd kill, but God, how do you get that to that point?
Well, going back for just a minute to the Mystics, there were a lot of guys that you had worked with, and that, tell me a little bit about kind of how you got involved with all of them.
Well, the Magic Club is right by my house. I think I was probably the closest of all the Mystics in terms of distance. It was like a mile and a half from my home. And I got into magic as a kid, and first it was a magic store, so I went to my local magic store, and there was Dana Daniels behind there, and sold me my first dye box, my first hippity hop rabbits, my first magic trick. And then it became converted to a stage for rehearsing and things like that. But I joined the magic club. I met Randy Pryor, taught me juggling, and I ended up going more in that direction.
Yeah.
So that made me a bit unique among mystics. But yeah, to me it was just my local magic club. I had no idea that it was anything special, much less.
Right.
It was very, great thing.
Well, did Dana Daniels do some juggling also?
Yeah, sure.
Yep.
Yeah, a bit, yeah. He worked at Disneyland. I was too proud to cut my hair, but he and Randy and Dana and all those guys were having fun, juggling and at Disneyland.
Yeah.
Well, I was, doing the Queen Mary or something for... fraction of the fun and pay.
But you didn't want to cut your hair.
Yeah.
That was what it was.
My life. It's a theme that runs throughout my life, this snatching defeat for the jaws of victory.
Exactly. All right, well, let me wrap up, but I just want to ask, because my podcast is called The Magic Word, and I always like to find out, what is it that someone's philosophy, what is important to you, what is your magic word? Phrase or
in one word, my magic philosophy.
Yeah, word or phrase. What's important? Yeah, what's your philosophy?
Boy, that's a tough one.
What do you live by? What do you?
That's a good question.
It all boils down to it. David Diebel believes in.
I believe in being stoic. I try not to characterize things. I don't. I make too much of a fuss when something good happens, and I try not to let bad things get me down. I try not to characterize. So, it is what it is. That's my motto. I mean, I know athletes get mocked when they say that, trying to shrug off a bad loss or whatever. But it makes you realize, it is what it is, and you don't characterize it. You may find in the long run it doesn't affect you so much. In the long run, be it good or bad. So just enjoy life for the moment and try to be a good person.
Yeah, well, that's great. Good advice. Thank you very much. That was David Diebel for the Magic Word Podcast. This is Scotty out.